Welcome to this week's edition of The Weekly Scoop with Coop. Welcome, everybody, spanning across the globe, the United States, wherever you're coming from. Thank you for tuning in and listening. This is the first inaugural podcast of The Weekly Scoop with Coop. My name's Cooper, and I'll be your host throughout this podcast. Let me just give you a quick introduction about who I am and what this channel is about. The Weekly Scoop with Coop mainly focuses on, it's a sporting podcast, and we focus on the majority of the major sports here in the United States, and primarily we have a little bit of an emphasis on the barrier sports because that's where I grew up. I'm a super passionate sports fan. I have been my whole life. I went to tons of games as a little kid. I went to Giants games, Sharks games. We went pretty much any type of sporting event, we went to it. So I really got a love for it. So we're going to be covering everything major sports that comes around that, and we're going to be putting a little bit of a twist on it, and other things like that, like little special occurrences. The World Cup's coming up, go Germany, so yeah, we're going to be rooting for them and covering them as well, so, but yeah, we're going to be following other major sporting things, player drafts, free agency, stuff like that. We're going to focus on a couple of specific stuff, like things that have been going on lately, the Donald Sterling happenings, you know, the big Michael Sam, and people have been making big deals about that. Landon Donovan getting left off the freaking U.S. national team. Idiots! God dang it! But yeah, might get a little heated, but we'll bring a little different perspective to what usually people think about sports and try to apply some common sense. Just to give you an overview of me, I'm a 20-year-old college student. Currently I'm residing in actually Oklahoma City for the summer, so it's been fun so far. It's pretty flat, but other than that, I've been getting a lot of good work done. But I'm currently a college student living in sunny San Diego, so life doesn't get much better last year, so I'll be near the beach. Can't wait. It's going to be awesome. But like I said, I love sports. I'm super passionate about it. I love following the games. I'll be giving you a little in-depth perspective of Bay Area sports and things like that. So in each of these podcasts, I'll be, kind of covering like a main section here and there, probably about 5 to 7 minutes each, trying not to spend on longer than that. The podcast should be around like 20 minutes. At the end, I like to do a famous segment, and that's probably why I started this podcast, is because I cannot believe some of the idiots and stupid things that happen someday in like these days in sports. I don't even know what to say. So we like to call that minute our 3-minute zinger section, where I just freaking go off on idiots nowadays and all these stupid, I'm not going to carry away, but stupid morons and all this stuff that happens, and we're going to set them in their place. It's pretty fun. You're going to get into it. I'm going to get into it. And so it's going to be fun, and we'll have a couple segments where we'll tweet out to the viewers, see if you guys want to tweet in any questions that you want me to answer or interact with the show, but we'll get to that later. So hope you got a good perspective of this show and what it's going to be about, and I hope you have you along for a long journey. So let's get this thing started, baby. Exercise just for the head and throw head back. Up and down. Exercise just for the head. Exercise just for the head. People, let's get started. So, I'm going to start on a little major sporting events that's going on right now. As most of you know, the NBA playoffs are in full swing, and we just finished up with both Western and Eastern Conference Finals, so we're going to see a rematch of last year, which I'm very much looking forward to. Go Spurs! I am a Golden State Warriors fan from up north, but unfortunately, you know, we couldn't put it together this year. No Bogut, you know, kind of hurt us, and we had there's a lot of falling out in the Warriors organization this year, so we're going to get to that in a little bit later segment, a couple later podcasts. We'll touch on that a little bit more, but like I said, I'm in OKC for this summer, so I've been here for about a week now, and I've been able to kind of see the Thunder pandemonium that, you know, encompasses this whole town. People are going crazy out there, even though I'm going to have to say a lot of people don't know shit about basketball, but things happen, you know. So I kind of wanted to touch on the last kind of Thunder-Spurs series. I've been watching it. I watched the whole series. I thought it was a pretty good series. Two really good teams. A lot of talent on both sides of the ball, and it was fun to watch. But I kind of wanted to focus on a specific subject. when it deals with Scott Brooks and the whole Thunder's organization. I don't know if you guys put any looked at it at all, but the Thunder have obviously, I would say, better skill and better talented players with a lot more athleticism than the Spurs, but the Spurs handled them pretty mightily for the whole series. They had those two slip-ups in OKC, but I think that was just because they weren't, you know, they weren't really ready for Ibaka, and he kind of was a game-changer in those two games. But what I really picked up on was it kind of falls back to coaching, and a lot of people don't really notice this because people think the NBA is a game played above the rim, which it is. It's a lot of athleticism, a lot of skill. It's very fast-paced, but they don't understand that coaching still plays a huge role, and I think that was on point for us in the Western Conference Finals, because when I saw Scott Brooks' face during the end of Game 6 and pretty much in Game 1, 2, and 5 when they got blown out, it looked like he was standing at the base of Mount Vesuvius and all that shit was about to erupt and come down and just drill his ass, because he looked like he saw a ghost or something. He was just standing there. He didn't know what to do. He looked down at his bench and said, well, shit, who the hell am I going to put in now, you know? And, you know, I think Pop just made him look like a JV girls coach in middle school. It was sorry. But, like I said, I think Pop's one of the best coaches in the NBA, so it's kind of hard to compete with something like that. But, you know, a lot of people around here, people focus on the players and stuff, and one of the players that I feel gets a real hard time around here is Russell Westbrook, and the guy's a freak athlete, don't get me wrong, he's a great basketball player, but he's going to make mistakes. Every basketball player makes mistakes. Does he make some more than other point guards maybe? Yeah, but that's the style he plays. He plays up-tempo, aggressive, and it's kind of a different fit for the Thunder, and I think they could go in a different direction that would maybe help their team out without him, but a lot of people blame it on players. Why did Durant play so bad at the end of the game? Why did Westbrook play so bad at the end of the game? You got to look at things like, you know, player minutes, okay? Like, obviously, the Spurs are an old team, so you saw Pop, you know, handling rotations throughout the series. You know, guys aren't playing, guys on the Spurs team aren't playing over 30 minutes a game in some of these blowout games, and even the games they lost. This last game, 6, was the only one that they played serious minutes in, and that was one because they went into overtime. But, I mean, if you just look at the whole, you know, just the time schedule across the series and you see, you know, the things that the Thunder had to go through, their players are playing like 45 minutes a game, like the main guys. KD's playing 40-plus minutes a game. Russ is playing 40-plus minutes a game. Reggie Jackson playing 40-plus minutes a game. Ibaka in Game 6 played 48 minutes and 30 seconds, and the dude's coming back from a calf injury where they said he was going to be done for the whole playoffs. So it's like, you know, the rotations by Brooks were just horrible. And that's why you saw Durant had 7 turnovers in Game 6, which is very un-MVP-like, but it's like, you know, it's not all on him. Obviously, players are going to mess up and have mistakes, but dude, you can't expect a guy to be perfect. You're freaking playing him. KD played 52 minutes in Game 6. 52. There's 53 minutes in an overtime basketball game. This MF'er played 52 damn minutes, so he got 1 minute worth, like 1 minute of break. It's just unreal. So I mean, these guys are in great shape, but you can't expect them to compete at a high level for that long. And the same thing, Ibaka, 48 minutes and 30 seconds. Jackson, 46 minutes and 42 seconds. Russ, 40, I think he had 42 in that game. It's just, you can't really push players that much and expect all this stuff. And the rotations just hurt, too. I mean, you saw him take Seth Loesch out of the starting lineup after Game 2, which was, you know, I think a good thing. And it obviously sparked a little more of an offensive presence when you put either, you know, a Jeremy Lamb in or a Reggie Jackson in the starting lineup. But the rotations during the whole series were just horrible. And it's not like OKC doesn't have good players coming off the bench. You know, they have decent players. Obviously, they're not the thickest bench in the league, and they're not super deep, but they're not by any means thin. I mean, obviously, Reggie Jackson is your sixth man and provides that scoring influence off the bench. So when you put him in the starting lineup and Seth Loesch didn't even play at all. So that was just, you know, they might as well suited his ass up because he was just sitting there with that stupid-ass haircut and not even doing anything with his life. Freaking ridiculous. Anyway, but, I mean, during the season, before Westbrook came back, you know, it was a different Thunder team. Obviously, KD was mustering a lot of the hold, and guys like, you know, Jeremy Lamb and Perry Jones were averaging, you know, a lot more minutes a game than what they saw in the playoffs. And obviously, Westbrook coming back is going to take away minutes, so that's not the problem, but when you sit a guy like Cephalosha, you got to bring in more people and more people off the bench. And he freaking played Derek Fisher 32 minutes a game. Now, Derek Fisher, obviously, you know, he's been in the game a while. Legend, knows how to play, but he shot 2 for 4 and didn't really make an impact. You know, if you bring in a guy like Jeremy Lamb, only played 6 minutes in, you know, game 6, he's going to provide more of an offensive spark. You don't know how many shots he's going to hit. And so and he's a better defender. And that's, Brooks just made some boneheaded mistakes where I'm just like, what are you freaking doing, guy? It's like, I didn't get it. But yeah, and you look at the way the Thunder play, it's just, they have no really set direction or plays off, you know, off end line out of bounds, off sideline out of bounds, you know, just bringing the ball up the court. It's either, you know, they obviously play best in transition. They have freak athletes, great players, but you saw them in the half court. They shit their pants. It was either a pick and roll with Westbrook and Ibaka, and if that didn't happen, then it was ISO ball, or it was a, you know, once in a blue moon, you'd see a freaking pin down for KD, and even that was covered well by Kawhi Leonard and the rest of the Spurs. So it's like, you know, if OKC had better coaching and probably, you know, better set plan coming into the season and into the playoffs, I honestly think they should have won. They were the better skilled team, but I honestly think Brooks just, he needs to go. I think he's had enough opportunity in OKC, and this is, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's gone to the freaking, what, Western Conference Finals the last 3 years, and he's made it to the freaking Finals once, but dude, you can't, you know, you got an all-star squad out there, and you can't put it together, and so I think it's just his time to go. And to be honest, I know a lot of Thunder fans don't like that, but just look at the freaking stats, you idiots. People out in Oklahoma, I don't get it. I mean, they're super nice, I love it, but they just don't, they see plays, Russell Westbrook, great player, like, don't get me wrong, he'll make a steal, and he'll make a miraculous dunk, or he'll hit a three-pointer at the buzzer, and it looks good, and people remember that, but they don't remember his freaking 7 turnovers a game. He can't, you know, he's not a great outside shooter. He shot 8 for 23 and 1 for 7 in overtime in game 6. It's like, he's not a good fit for that system. And if you had a pass first point guard, obviously, you know, big free agent in the offseason, Rajon Rondo, you never know what he might be able to do. It's just, the Thunder have a good young team. I think KD and Ibaka will be the cornerstones. I think, you know, Russ can move on. I think they could add a better piece to how their system works in there, but, we'll have to see. And, it just proved that the Spurs overall were a better team, and they were just better coached out there. And they proved it. When Ibaka came back, they struggled, but after that, they adapted to it. Pop just made some great in-game coaching, you know, in-game coaching decisions that really pushed them over the top. So it's going to be a fun finals. But yeah, OKC can have a bright future, but not if this Scott Brooks is at the helm, because this shit ain't gonna happen, but it's my little rant on OKC. We'll get on to a little Bay Area action, baseball in full swing, so we'll be talking about that in a little bit. Baseball is back, baby, and the Giants are in full swing, and they're in it. And to any Giants fans out there, I think all I have to say is 37-20, bitches. That's best in the MLB, for those of you who didn't know, but the Giants have been killing it this year so far, which is awesome to see. They had a great May. They went 19-9, which is just awesome. A good hot start is what they needed after last season's performance, so it's good to see the Giants are back on track. The roster looks great. Everything's really clicking. I think everything's coming together for the Giants this year, and we're setting a good pace over the Dodgers and Rockies so far. We're about, I think, 7 games up right now, and it's looking good. It's looking good, and this is a year that we weren't really projected to do that well. So I'm really glad everything's getting into topic. So we'll touch on a couple things so quick. I mean, everything's pretty much been good for the Giants, but let's. I wanted to touch on a couple points that I think. It's been a little bit different from last year, and why they kind of have been sparked so early. And I think one of the major things is their offense. I mean, obviously that's it's kind of been a lacking part. Even in the 2 years where we won the championships in 2010 and 2012, we didn't really have a super potent offense where you know, it was really like, oh, a feared pitch in the Giants. You know, there were still games where, you know, we wouldn't muster up a lot of runs during the regular season, but we had that timely pitching, a great rotation, and this year, we still have a great rotation, and we actually have a really strong bullpen this year, too, which is awesome. But the offense has really been, I honestly think it's been really consistent throughout the whole year. I mean, obviously, the players are going to struggle and slump up and down. There was a couple, you know, here and there at the beginning of the season. You know, Pablo and Pence were really struggling at the plate, but I mean, they've really turned it around, and that's been like a really, you know, something really good to look for. And we've had guys that have been consistent all year round, but yeah, Pence is batting 284 now, just straight hoss, and he's cut as hell too. If y'all didn't notice that, this fool is so big. Probably deadlifts your mama plus a house or something. I don't even know. But Sandoval's really come on after slumping. I mean, he's only at 251 right now, but you have to think about he was at like 120, 160 in frickin' May. I mean, at the beginning of May, and he's really turned it around. And for the rest of the Giants lineup, I mean, it's been a pretty good year so far. And I think the thing that's been, you know, that's really helped is the addition of two guys that we really didn't have last year, and one of them was due to injury, which is Pagan, who has just been a monster for us at the leadoff. I mean, every single Giants game I watch, and I try to watch as much as I can, MLB TV, holla. But yeah, he's batting 327 as a leadoff hitter. He's doing a great job. He's got 11 steals, 3 home runs and 17 RBIs, which is great through, you know, 2 months of the season, which is awesome so far. And he's really, I think, catapulted the Giants' offense and really provided a spark, whether it be in the first or just getting on base and totally. He always hits the ball hard, laces it, you know. It's been good to see him come back after the injury from last year, and I think that's helped a lot. And obviously, the other guy has been the big train out on the freaking left field and now first base for on occasion, Michael Morris. The dude is also a freaking hoss, jacked as hell. But he's just batting just a shy under 300, but he's leading a team with homers and RBIs at 11 home runs and 38 RBIs, and he's been just an enormous pickup for the Giants, I think. He's really been another catalyst for our offense in the middle of the lineup that's provided us that that pop that we haven't had, which has been awesome. You know, a huge pickup for Sabian. And but yeah, like I said, over the last couple of weeks, a lot of guys have stepped up over the last month of May. You know, guys have been doing really well, and I personally, the starting rotation really has exceeded my expectations this year. That's I thought we were kind of like slumping off this year than what we've had in the, you know, previous 4 to 5 years, but they've really stuck it to pretty much, you know, every single team we've gone against. We haven't really lost too many series. I think we only lost the one to the Marlins this year in May, in the month of May. But other than that, they've been winning a lot of series. They've been, you know, they've been pitching and pitching a lot of innings so far. I mean, I knew Hudson was a great pitcher. When I was a little kid, I watched him when he was in Oakland when they had Mark Mulder and Hudson and Zito when they were just dealing, and he looks like the Oakland Hudson that I saw. And I know he had a great career with the Braves, and he's pitched over 77 innings so far, which has been awesome, at a 1.75 ERA, which is incredible for someone at his age. And he's commanded a presence. Bumgarner, who was a little slow at first, has really gotten back on the schneid in May, and freaking 2.85 with 7 wins and 3 losses, which has been awesome. Vogelstam really stepped it up. He was I was honestly too a little suspect of him at first, but he's done a really good job. Lincecum, I mean, obviously he's been slumming the last couple of years, but he's done more than what I've expected, and I think he's put together, you know, he's put together some good starts for the Giants. Obviously, we had he only went 5 innings, but we had no hit ball with him, and he's been pitching a good game. And I mean, obviously Kane's been hurt; he's on the DL right now. But even him, when he pitched, you know, he had a couple rough outings, but I think that's more with run support. But he still had a 3.66. That's pretty good for a start, and I think a lot of major league teams would take that. But Petit has done a really good job of stepping in and filling that last rotation spot, which has really helped out a lot. And like I said, the bullpen is great this year. We got a lot of guys that come in and pump. My favorite is Machi. Just comes in there and shuts things down. He's at a 0.33 RA right now, which is unbelievable for a guy out of the pen with 27 innings pitched. It's just awesome to see that. Gutierrez is coming in and throwing good stuff. Affeld coming back off the injury has been good. The two guys that I think are a little suspect in the pen that people get a little weary of so far has been Javi Lopez and Sergio Romo, and I think they might be, you know, for them, I think Lopez might be a good, you know, little trade bait at near the deadline, because they really don't use him a lot. Only like I think it's 11 and 2/3 innings pitched this year, and he hasn't been bad at all. But they don't really use him a lot as much as you know, guys like Santiago, Casilla, things like that. And like I said, Machi's been taking on a big role, and now with Affeld back, is really I think we could get something good for him. You know, being a left-handed specialist, and we really don't use him that much. And the other guy's Romo. in the closing spot. And it's kind of hard to say because the guy has, what, 17 saves this year. But things have been a little, you know, risque when he's on the mound. But, I mean, we really can't complain. He's doing a good job so far. But in the last, you know, in the last year of his deal, I don't know if the Giants will re-sign him or not. I know he's a household name and he's been a Giant and the fans love him. But I don't know if he really has that elite stuff that we saw, you know, when Brian Wilson was on the staff, when he was just mowing fools down in the ninth. You know, you kind of see that, obviously the nasty slider from Romo, but it's not, you know, it's not really that go-to pitch that a closer really has. More like, you know, you see it predominantly on a traditional closer, you know, like in high, you know, four-seam, two-seam, cut-piece fastball, and then maybe a curve here and there. But Romo's different, but I definitely haven't lost faith in him, but he has been a little weary, but like I said, we can't complain, baby. I just, it's another year of baseball, and it's getting to the good parts so far. So we will keep in tabs on the Giants this year, and we will let you know how it's doing. So thank you, and I hope you enjoyed.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time. Top 5 Zingers of the Week.
The price is wrong, bitch.
You done messed up, A.A. Ron!
Sensei. Bow to your sensei!
Your balls are showing.
Bumblebee tuna.
Coming in at number 5, we have the 7-2 Georgetown Giant, Roy Hibbert. Let me tell you, Roy, you're absent from the second half of the season pretty much and almost the entire playoffs. You're 7-2. How are you absent from anything, you big retard? When I see you trying to wedge for an O board, it looks like you're trying to have, you know, your dry hump. It's like a 15-year-old dry hump in his first girlfriend. It's unbelievable. He's turned into he's softer than a bag of Charmin toilet paper. I just can't get over it. Number 4. Jeff Van Gundy. I have to listen to his ass commentate over the Eastern Conference Finals. And in the Game 6, a pivotal game in Miami, the whole first quarter and a little bit over that, all he does is harp about how Lance Stephenson's so mean and he shouldn't be picking on LeBron and that's not professional. Get over it. It's part of the game. Everyone trash talks. When I was 5 years old, I trash talked and told kids they smelled and they're stupid, all right? Lance Stephenson's just playing, and I'm pretty sure you were a coach for the Big Bag Knicks back in the early 90s, and they were definitely not soft. You're a poon, idiot. Moving on to number 3, U.S. soccer fans. I like to compare U.S. soccer fans to a lunar solar eclipse, and what I mean by that is they come around every so often and then you really never see them again. Let me tell you something. U.S. soccer fans come around every 4 years for the World Cup, they get hyped up, they'll take work off, they'll wake up early, set their alarm for 4:30 in the morning, they'll do all this stuff, they'll go to the Sports Authority and get their scarves and jerseys, and they'll be cheering on the group stage, but guess what, people? United States gets eliminated every year. I hate to say it, but they do. And the fact that right after the group stage is over, you go on with your regular life and never happens again. Pissing me off. If you're going to support the whole time. God, freaking morons. Moving on to number 2. We're staying with the soccer action here and going with the United States men's center back, Chris Beisler. Watched a little commentary tonight on ESPN. It was a short road to Brazil featuring the U.S. men's national team. And Mr. Beisler was asked a question. How's it going to be different defending Ronaldo than it is different other players here? And this was his answer. He said, "Well, I think I'm just going to try to take the ball from him. He's human like everyone else, and we're all soccer players." Chris, you were right on one thing. You all do play soccer. But I'm pretty sure Real Madrid doesn't want to pay you $150,000 plus a week to play soccer for them. And I wonder why. They do that for Ronaldo. So listen up. That's like saying, "Oh, here, let's take someone, Draymond Green on the Warriors. How do you feel about guarding Michael Jordan? That's just another guy. I'll just take the ball from him." No, idiot. You don't just take the ball from Ronaldo. Your ass is going to get put on skates. Frickin', this is why the USA is going to frickin' lose probably to Portugal, Germany, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did Ghana. Moving on to the final. Last but not least, number 1. Chris Bosch's tweets. Never really been a big fan of Chris Bosch. He was in Toronto. He had a great post-up game. Actually was an offensive presence and a defensive presence there. And then he wanted to become part of the Big 3 and ended up being the redheaded stepchild of Miami. Chris Bosh posted a couple tweets long ago. As most of you seen, Chris Bosh is anorexic and is allergic to the paint now. So you see him wandering around the three-point line, and he'll hit a three-pointer, probably maybe one a game, you know, but he goes 1 for 3, pretty much horrible, doesn't help the Miami offense at all. And he posts tweets, a couple, I think it was last week, saying, let me just find them off so I can read them off to you. This is why he doesn't post up anymore. I don't bang with anybody anymore because it's tiring for me. It's not my strength, and I understand that. You know, it just takes a lot out of me, and playing defense and playing offense the way Miami wants me to just takes all my energy away. Let me give you a little tip of advice, Chris. How about you go home, get off Twitter, eat a protein shake, eat a hamburger, sack up, you're playing center for the damn two-time defending champs, and you're afraid to go post up? Freaking ridiculous. It's been Zingers of the Week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. It's been a fun first podcast. Sorry if it was a little long. I'll try to trim it down to about 25 minutes in the future. But just wanted to say, if you want to interact with the show at all, if you want to give your opinion, or is there something you want me to talk about, then you can tweet me at Scoop with Coop on Twitter, or you could just email me a response or something like that at scoopwithcoop@gmail.com. I appreciate the support, and I appreciate you for listening. I hope you have a great day. And peace.